everybody. I'm Addict Named Dan.
Hey, Dan.
I'd like to thank the Northeast Freedom Area and the Trusted Servants for putting on this event. I usually attend like the campouts y'all do in the springtime, and I love it. I love what this area does. You know, showing that the unity and, you know, what we do in recovery to have fun and stay clean. You know, it's something that I think is very important. And I'm hella nervous. Thank you to the convention committee for asking me to come share. It's been a crazy, wild few months in my own personal recovery. I just had to, like, you know, run this by my now wife as of yesterday, because we just found out we were pregnant recently. I was like, baby, is it okay if I go on a Saturday and, like, come over to, like, by Baltimore to come, you know, do something? It's now I have to, like, run things by other people. You know, it's not something I'm used to in my life. You know, I'm so much of, like, you know, hey, by the way, I'm going to go do this. This is my plan, you know, because I'm a very self-centered person, you know, at the root of all of this. This is my life, and this is what I want to do, you know. But as I come into recovery and I learn and I shift and I change, you know, the number one thing I have to do is change my perspective here, you know. And a topic like this is something that always reminds me that, yeah, thank you very much for working on closing that, man. That it's not about, like, what had happened to me or the actions that I had done in my life, but it's always about my perspective and how I carry that in the world, you know? Because for so long, I justified my using and my actions and the way I hurt people and took advantage of people as a rationalization to protect myself, you know? I've worked through the steps a couple times, and I've understood where, like, the self-centered fear that I have, you know? And a lot of the roots come to that, like, I need to protect myself because I think you're in my life to leave me or hurt me, you know, and that I got to get over on you before you can get over on me. And that's inspired a lot of, like, the fear-based thinking and actions that led me down the path of finding a room in, like, the seat in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, you know. I've, like, totally come to terms with my first step, that this is a disease of obsession and compulsion. Because I wouldn't need the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous if I just had a problem with a substance, you know? I had understood how to, like, not pick up that substance, but I never understood how to stay stopped, you know? And how this disease transforms itself through the obsession and compulsion past just the picking up a substance today, you know? Because even in I think it's especially important because we talked about the chapter of recovery and relapse in the basic text. It talks about how picking up is the last part of a relapse, you know? There are so many more things that go on before I get to that stage. I hear people talk about it all the time. And I can know it from my personal story where I think that picking up was where the relapse started. Like, no, there was so much that went on in here that led me down that path that I wasn't willing to live and accept and share and be open and honest with people to find the freedom that this program gives me, you know? Because it's through that first step of acceptance and admittance that, like, I had the ability to step out of my own way. Because if I don't think I got a problem, you know, I'm going to continue down the same path until, you know, I may not be picking up, but I may be hurting people and pushing people away and finding myself in a world of hurt, you know? Like, this convention's theme is the spiritual awakening, and I think that's what this is all about, you know? It's about that connection to the higher power, whatever that looks like for you, and for me, it's like using it as a spiritual compass, you know? Because I knew my life was guided by, like, all these defective actions for so long that when I started to live by these spiritual principles, it was like a guiding compass in my life. And it's about that, like, check up on the 10 step all the time and, you know, constantly being vigilant of where I'm at. Because for me, like, I could be acting out in slight patterns unbecoming of the man that I want to be in recovery, where I'm slowly drifting off that compass, right? If you're a ship at sea and you're guided by your compass and you're, like, 0.5 degrees off course, you may not find yourself that far off course, like, a couple of, like, hours or even a day later. But if I continue on this path for a couple days, weeks, months, I'm going to wake up in the middle of uncharted waters in a world of hurt thinking, how did I get here again? You know, clean. How did I get to the situation where I'm hating myself, hating the way I feel, questioning life, questioning why I need to be here? You know, like, I have gotten so many blessings as a result of being in Narcotics Anonymous, right, and staying clean and living this program, right, where, like, I have, like, I have a house in my name and a beautiful woman that I share a bed with and a car that's in my name, but I still woke up and a wonderful job where I still woke up thinking like, what the fuck's the point? Why am I still here? You know? Like, why do I keep doing this? Why do I wake up and do these meetings and feel like this is all pointless? And you know what? Like, I had found that I had got myself so far off course because of some simple actions, right? And simple mindset, right? Because for me, I don't know about y'all, for me, like, some of the big stuff in life that can show up, like, doesn't always challenge my belief that I'm going to be okay. Sometimes it's these small little acts. They say, like, you know, it's the gnats that'll get you, you know, not the elephant, right? That, like, it's these little things that bite around me that I find myself grabbing to at times and, like, driving myself down this, like, hole, right? And it shifts and changes over time. I need to stay in a constant reflection of how these steps show up in my life, or I could end up in a world of hurt. And I'm not afraid of picking up and using just for today, but I'm afraid of feeling unworthy and unloved and unlovable as a result of the person that I think I am, right? And it's all about this perception of the person that I think I am, that I think that I'm not good enough or I'm not worthy, right? And this stems from an early age, you know? Like, this disease has me wanting to escape reality for so long. You know, I remember being early in childhood. One of my first earliest memories is my father coming home and whipping my ass because I was acting out in preschool. But I'm acting out in preschool because the house I'm living in is jacked up, right? Like, my parents are always fighting and this, that, the third. I remember finding, just last year, we found an old paper. Like, it was an old evaluation they did when I was, like, 9 years old, and they said, Dan is a highly intelligent individual, but he is deeply emotionally troubled. At 9 years old, you know, like, the evidence was on the wall. My parents were like, I said it's because of what was going on in the house, and my parents were like, oh no, we're doing fine, you know, like, everything's okay at home. Meanwhile, a few years later, my dad tries to, like, run away to Raleigh, North Carolina from New York, and, like, you know, like, there's all this stuff that's going on, and, like, I just always wanted to escape, you know? And I escaped early on through, like, literature, movies, comic books, video games, like, you name it. I wanted to find this life outside of me. Until I started using it, I thought, that was it. This is the answer, right? This is how I want to feel. This will coat everything that I'm trying to do to make me feel okay. But if using was always the answer, like, what was the question to begin with, you know? And it wasn't until I got into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, started doing some step work, and I started to peel back these layers and understand where this fear and this hurt boy is that's, like, deep down inside of me. And it's wild, you know, like, this idea of, like, hidden bottoms clean, you know? Like, I remember one of the earliest big feeling moments that I had was, like, I remember, like, trying to make friends in recovery. It's kind of weird. I was, like, getting clean around, like, Northern Virginia in Washington, D.C., and there's a lot of, like, clicky stuff, but that's, like, recovery in general is, like, clicky stuff, you know? Like, we're people. This isn't a perfect program. Like, we're individuals taking this into a, like, you know, trying to practice these principles, and that's all okay, right? I remember being outside of this, like, 10 p.m. meeting, and I, like, had just got a year clean recently, and I'm in a circle with, like, these five dudes that I thought I was chill with, and this one dude's like, hey, are you coming out to eat with us? Are you coming out to eat with us? Are you coming out to eat with us? And then he skipped over me, and I was like, what the fuck, you know? Like, what the fuck? You know, I took that shit hella personal. I took it hella personal, man. Because I'm a soft, tissue paper emotioned individual, you know? I play rugby, and I'm 230 pounds, and I may be 6'1", but, like, at the heart of this, I am, like, a soft dude that just wants to be understood. And I think that's a lot of it for people in general, you know? And I remember the next day calling my sponsor and talking to him, and I'm sitting in my driveway. I remember being in my driveway, sobbing on the phone because of how I felt, you know? Like, this isn't something that, like, attacked me or hit me. Like, this is something that I felt inside, and I'm, like, sobbing for, like, 45 minutes on the phone, you know? And my sponsor usually wouldn't be on the phone that long with me, and I just, like, was pouring this out and how I felt, you know? And my sponsor was like, hey, man, when you're hurt, just, like, help people, help people, help people, help people, you know? And it's a constant reminder that, like, it's not about me today. Even the things I think and feel and, like, all this stuff, it's not about me. I need to be part of something bigger than myself, because whenever I take things personal and I think it's about me and I hit that core of self-obsession, you know, I could really dig into that, man, and I find myself in a world of hurt, and, like, I'm lashing out at people and I think this world is all just about me and whoop-de-whoop and all that, man. But I had that next morning a commitment to speak at a meeting, and I remember sharing at that meeting, right? And like there was this girl that raised her hand, and like it was like all like the outside stuff that didn't matter, you know, like we were so like on the outside different, right? But she shared, and after that, one of the long timers came to me and was like, dude, this girl's been coming to this meeting for a month and we've been trying to get her to share. And she shared after that. And like, I took that shit as something positive, you know? And it's not me, you know? It's not Dan inviting this one girl and whoop-de-whoop and all that. But it was like, by being a part of, we help each other, you know? And I get through my little hurt tissue paper feelings, emotions, and I reconnect to the fellowship, right? And we help each other. And that's the moral of what Narcotics Anonymous always speaks to me. It's the we. That's why I think our fellowship, talking about the we, is like one of the biggest things to me as an individual practicing these spiritual principles in my program. And I'll get to that a little bit later on my last little bit of pain and suffering, self-imposed pain and suffering here in Narcotics Anonymous, right? And other bottoms that I hit clean, man, like after that, like, you know, that's my newcomer little stuff. And of course, I've got a year clean and things are going all right. I got a little money in my pocket and I'm single. So of course, like one of the next big things to break my heart is like a her, you know, of course, it's got to be a her in Narcotics Anonymous, man. And of course, she was a member, dude. Like, of course, it's got to be like that, like a toxic pool of like, you know, that I got to be a part of, man. Not to say that, like, this is my experience, man. Like, I pick a sick one because I'm pretty sick myself, you know? But of course, the ones that got their shit together don't want to come over and talk to me, man. Of course. But I digress, because I remember even being before I started talking to a her, man, I remember sitting in a meeting, and there was this girl, and in that flash, right, I looked at her, and I, like, had the whole story. Like, there was us dating, you know, the proposal, the marriage, the child, the divorce, the custody battle, you know, all that, like, in a flash, you know? Because, like, that is where the obsession goes to for me, man. That stuff runs deep. But, like, it's all about, like, not trying to stick into that and stay stuck, you know? For me, it's about being able to, like, identify and let these things show up. Because I know I will never be perfect. I know how damaged I come from. Like, I'm not here to be no spiritual guru. I'm just here to have acceptance for myself and others today, you know? And I'm trying to let these thoughts that come in not stick around and linger, you know? I heard someone mention to me once, it's like, having the front door and the back door of my house opening up, that's what my mind's like. And like these thoughts pass through, right? But I don't have to, I cast them to stop for tea, you know? They don't have to stick around and stick with me, because it's when I linger with these thoughts and I cling to these thoughts that like I'm not living in spiritual principles and understand that there's something greater than me. I'm not seeing these signs and I'm not like, being relieved of my sanity. When I cling to these thoughts, I revert back to this insane spiraling thinking, and then I go backwards and I'm like not accepting and not understanding, and I'm not admitting the problem I'm in, and like I've fallen backwards in my recovery in that moment, and like there I am in the grasp of obsession and compulsion, you know? But yeah, I remember like dating this girl for a little bit and like, you know, us not working out, and like I was hurt, you know? It was like sitting in bed at like 7 o'clock in the evening, and instead of going to the meeting, there I am with the like blankets up, and I feel this pit in my stomach, and I'm like, I just want to die, you know? Oh, so emotional and dramatic, you know? Like that's where these like thoughts and feelings do for me, you know? And we talk about how it's like a feelings disease at times, man, and this truly is, because these things always click back to that story when I go through the step work and I relive that aspects of my fifth step. What's the exact nature of all this stuff, Dan? Because it's never hurt my sponsor before I got married and met the woman that I'm, you know, is my wife. Whenever I talk about some girl, he always knew, he saw the signs of like the obsession and the flirtation and all this kind of stuff in my head, and not like the true story. He was always like, dude, she's a silhouette with a question mark. Where's the reality? Where's the story of all of this, you know? Because like at some point, it's always me trying to find someone that's going to love me unconditionally, you know, that isn't going to leave me, that's not going to hurt me, whoop-de-whoop, all that nonsense, man. And it's wild, you know? It's wild, but like Narcotics Anonymous is always a place that like I felt safe, even if like the her that I've talked to has been in the rooms. You know, I've understood that there's a safe place for me and her to be, and luckily I've been in meeting places where we don't have to frequent the same meetings all the time and relive that moment all the time. But that stuff still happens, man. You know, and I try not to have the animosity and tell this story behind the her and she did and whoop de whoop. But I get to let her be herself, and I get to practice principles and be like, Dan, like that hurt feelings that you have nothing to do with her and everything to do with yourself. Where's your acceptance and where's your self-love? And that's where a lot of this stuff comes from, man, is the idea of self-love, you know? Like, if I'm not willing to love myself, how am I going to be okay out in the world living through life on life terms, you know? And it doesn't have to be the hurt. It could be at work, you know, where someone hurts my feelings because of how they talk to me. Dan, you don't have to, like, revert and spiral down because someone came out of pocket at you. You don't got to play this tit for tat no more. You have the spiritual principles, Dan, maybe not the world around you or the workplace, because I work in a fast-paced environment, but like, you got the spiritual principles, Dan. You get to practice this, you know? And how's that living in your life today? Because I've been through some tough times here in Narcotics Anonymous. Like I said, like, I've had the idea of the God of my own understanding live in my life. Like, I remember back in the summer of 2023 that, like, I was working out at the gym at work on a Thursday afternoon, getting a phone call, and they said, Dan, please don't come into work tomorrow. You're on unpaid administrative leave pending an investigation against you. And immediately I knew what had happened, because there was this person at work that wasn't doing their job, and I stopped covering for them. And instead of covering for them, I started reporting them. And our boss didn't write any of this down. And, like, they filed a bogus harassment claim against me. And I knew it. I was like, I know exactly who did this, man. And I think the jig is up. Because in my environment, dude, if, like, you know, I'm a disposable. You know, I'm at a for-hire state. They don't have a reason to cut me loose. But I understood in that moment that no matter what happened to me at my job, I was going to be okay. You know, that's big stuff to me, you know, because the job was like the image. The job was the money I had in my pocket, the car, being able to pay for stuff. But in that moment, for some reason, I knew I was going to be okay. I had faith that it was all going to work out. Why do I spiral into this hole of self-pity because of some chick broke my heart for a moment, you know? And that's some stuff that I always have to understand and do the work around, you know? I need to continue to stay vigilant on top of my spiritual condition. Otherwise, I could find myself living in that spiral, you know? And it starts in small ways. And this happened to me not too long ago, right? Where I had just moved to, I bought a house, right? And I moved from a big area of Narcotics Anonymous where I can go to meetings in Virginia, D.C., Maryland. I can hit all three, like, you know, in one day. I could do all that to, like, a more rural environment where, like, maybe there's this many people at a big-time celebration meeting, you know? We get, like, maybe a dozen people at a meeting, and, like, it's usually the same people at the same meeting. So, like, it's a big shift, it's a big change. And I, like, you know, took some things personal that someone said once, and instead of, and it was a newcomer too, you know, I'm supposed to have some principles, and I let some stuff a newcomer said at a meeting after a meeting, like, you know, get under my skin, and like a lot of life on life terms had happened, and I was like, why do I need to put that much effort into my recovery like that again? You know, I don't need to be consistent in going to meetings, you know, every night of the week. You know, I meet with my sponsor on Mondays and whoop-de-whoop and all this stuff. And I got a busy life, don't you know? Like, I play rugby. I got a job. I'm trying to date people. Like, I got a busy life. Narcotics Anonymous, like, you know, it's taking a bit of a back seat right here, you know? And it was 23 days before I had hit one meeting to the next meeting. And in that 23 days is when I had, like, hit the lowest spiritual condition that I had had in my recovery, you know? It's at that moment where I thought, waking up, like, I have a house and a girl that loves me and a car and a job, like, but what the fuck am I doing, you know? Like, I should just put a gun to my head and end it all because of this pain of my own existence. And, like, all of this is self-pity. It's all self-induced because I'm not willing to accept and turn things over and live in the moment, you know? Which has always been the core of my own dilemma, you know? Has always been that I can't live with the reality of what's going on, so I need to change the way I feel. Whether it's a her, or some food, or a substance, or the gym, or obsessing about the next thing going on in life. I mean, I could talk for like 40 minutes about my, like, you know, me recovering rugby, you know? Like, that's some stuff I love. But like, you know, what's the work that I'm doing? So after I hit that moment of self-pity, I still hadn't even had a home group at that point. And I'd moved to that area. And this was like, you know, mid-September this all happened. And my clean date's in December. I'm like, dude, I want to celebrate somewhere. And I ain't got no home group yet, you know? Like, I ain't got no service position going on just yet. So I felt that spiritual low. And I talked to my sponsor about it. I'm very grateful that even though I'd hit that point where, like, I didn't go to a meeting for 23 days, I meet with my sponsor every Monday at 7 p.m. and we write on step work for an hour. You know, we hold ourselves accountable for step work. And I'm grateful that I had that bit of connection to recovery, because who knows what would have happened if I didn't have that. There's a possibility I could have used whoop-de-whoop all that. But, like, for me, it's about, like, this spiritual awakening and the spiritual connection to the God of my understanding, primarily through step work, right? That's where I get my big hit from, like, my connection. And it reminds me of an aspect that, like, is talked about in the 11th step, you know? We're, like, living the 11th step, right? The principles in this. Living it is the benefit that we get from this program that we can't get from enforced morality. Like, I can't enforce a newcomer how to live this program like I've lived it, you know? Like, I'm grateful that the people that raised me in Narcotics Anonymous gave me the suggestions and told me what I need to do to find this new way to live, but they couldn't enforce me to do it. They couldn't come to my house and knock on my door. They couldn't drag me to the meeting. They couldn't force me to put pen to paper. It's through my own effort and through the connection and understanding of this program that I've developed this understanding of what's worked for me and what doesn't work for me, you know? And that's why when I hit a real low point, it was that connection to Narcotics Anonymous that still kept me going, you know? I remember going back to that first meeting and sitting there and feeling this, like, pressure valve just opened up and feeling so much better. Like, dude, why didn't you go to a meeting so much sooner in this point of pain and suffering, you know? And it's usually these small, simple things that I could do that I choose not to do. You know, for me as somebody, I find it real hard at times to pick up the phone, you know? Like, just a simple action of picking up the phone. You know how many times I've seen someone at a meeting that I respect and I do want to talk to them, but I'm like, hey, I need to call you more, you know? But I just don't, man. Like, and it's these simple things. And I just started, you know, that's one of the things that I got back to, was just, like, simple calling people on my ride home from work instead of listening to that audiobook I wanted to listen to. Or any of these dumb self-centered actions. It's always a self-centered action that puts this wall between me and truly living life, you know? And it's always these simple little things that I could do. Picking up the phone and talking to another recovering addict for a few minutes. Getting to that meeting early and chatting with someone that I never chatted with before. Hanging out after the meeting and talking to that newcomer that just shared about they don't know what to do, you know? And it's all these simple things. So after going through that period of self-loathing for no reason, I got back into this thing more than ever. And it's really wild because in, like, the Living Clean, it talks about that idea where, like, breakdown usually precedes breakthrough, you know? And, like, I'm really grateful that I'm not a guru sitting on a mountain somewhere thinking that, like, I'm spiritually enlightened. I'm grateful that, like, I'm just a human being living life on life's terms, going through these, and as things show up, I get to course correct and adjust, you know? That I get to go through the ups and downs. Because if there were only ups, like, I wouldn't have any appreciation of that, you know? And I'm grateful that I get to go through all this so I can get back into it, you know? It's like, a lot of things are cyclical for me, you know? And I'm grateful that I went through that moment and I found a home group that really works for me and I got back in service more than ever. I got a nice, my home group Sunday nights in Fredericksburg, Virginia. I live in the Urana area, Rappahannock area of NA. We have a nice convention coming up in September. If you guys want to come by, we'd love to see you all there. It's like this, nice and intimate and small. I love that better than, like, world convention or regional conventions, you know? But yeah, I got a commitment to make coffee again at the home group, and I got an H&I commitment, and they wanted me to do work on the convention committee because I'm an outsider, and of course you're new, so hey, we need you to get right into service with us, you know? And my life had felt more rewarding than ever again, you know? And it's all about plugging back in, you know? Because at times, I can get wrapped up in the self-pity and the self-woe of all these things going on, but, like, what am I doing about it, you know? Like, I had been at a job, and I had this horrible boss, and all I did was complain about it for, like, a couple of months before. I was like, dude, what are you doing about this? Are you going to live in the same self-pity and loathing that you're, like, going through the same cycle, or are you going to do something different? And you know what that doing something different looks like, but I'll tell you what. Sometimes living in that same familiar pain is a lot easier than stepping out on faith and doing something different, you know? And I had done this even in my relationship, you know? Because at times it's hard for me to continue to love someone at a certain point because I'm like, fuck, they're going to move. Like, I have to leave them before they leave me and stuff. And before me and my wife got married, you know, there was a point last year where, like, we broke up for, like, a month, and it was all because of me, and I looked for the excuse to push her away because I'm a big pusher, you know. I want to push you out of my life or push you away before you could do anything to me. And it's wild on the reflection, like, just how much that simple self-centered pain that I was feeling or self-centered thinking, and all I had to do was surrender and turn things over, you know. And if you're new, like, please keep coming back and give yourself a chance. Like, this program works. Thank you so much for letting me share.
I would like to introduce our second speaker, Debbie.
I'm an addict. I'm Deb.
Hey, Deb.
Hey, everybody. I want to thank the committee, too, for asking me to come out and share, having that faith and confidence in me to be able to do this. I think I have, like, 15 or 20 minutes. And, praying about this topic, yes, I have notes up here, and you'll figure out why in a minute. I kind of have come to the conclusion that steps help me weather all the storms, no matter what they are. But my sponsorship, my sponsor, and step work doesn't keep the storms from coming. And for me, hitting a bottom in recovery, or hitting a bottom clean... Whoa. was my health. I got clean in 89. Yeah, girl. And had some information under my belt. I had been here for a minute, and I had 18 years clean, and I found out that I had a brain tumor. Crazy. I had a toothache for like 9 months, and they sent me to get a root canal and a crown and all these things, and like time is going on and on and on, and like I know my body. And my general practitioner knew I was in recovery. I ride a motorcycle. He rides a motorcycle. We have a lot in common. And I told him, I went to see him, and I said, listen, like, I know you know. I know my body. And I'm telling you, man, something's wrong. And he ran some really simple basic coordination tests in his office and ordered an MRI. And, like, I had been and seen dentists and, like, all these different people over the course of 9 months. And the long and short was his secretary called. This was over Christmas holiday. And his office was closed. And she calls and she says, hey, he wants to make an appointment to see you. And I said, okay, yeah, well, when do you want me to come? And she said, how about now? Can you come up now? And I was like, aren't you closed? And she was like, well, sort of. And I thought, man, this isn't going to be good. So my husband and I went up there. And he comes in. He's like this really, he's a biker, this really big presence of a guy. And he comes in, and this dude is sheep white. And I'm like, man, you look like crap. And he kind of laughs, and he like takes a step back. And he's like, girl, I don't even know how to tell you this. You got a tumor in your head the size of a lemon. He said, now listen, I have the films, and I have a neuro friend of mine who lives down, has a practice down the street, and he's waiting for you and your husband. Go. Now. So I go down and I see this guy, and he's looking, and also opened his practice to see us. And his wife is there with him, and she's on the phone with Johns Hopkins. He's like, listen, I think I am a very good surgeon, but I'm not touching this. And like in that moment, I'm going, I am being punked. Somebody is pulling tricks. Like, there's no way, right? I got a damn toothache. Come on. So I'm like, at this point, just give me the pill. Whatever that pill is, because, you know, there's a pill for everything. Just give me the pill and everything will work out and it'll be great, right? There's no pill for this. And they send me to Johns Hopkins. And I share all that to tell you, and I just did a meeting on the third step, and I talked about the same thing, because while that bottom wasn't like this emotional bottom or bottom from using drugs, it was a different kind of bottom. This was a storm in which was not self-imposed, right? So it was a storm in which I had to jump through the hoop that was put in front of me. I didn't have a choice. No, I did have a choice. I could have just, you know, thrown my hands up and said, oh, well, it is what it is. It will all work out and God's will be done. But I wanted to live. I needed to be proactive. And there were a lot of things that I needed to do in that moment of which I had no clue. And so I had to like take this really big, deep breath and calm, find that place of peace and walk out on a big dose of faith that everything was going to be all right. And like I really got still and I said my prayers because I have that God. And I knew that no matter what that outcome was, if I did die, I was going to go out clean. And there would be a message in that. So what I've kind of concluded is there is a message in being able to stand here today before you to be able to tell you that, yeah, I went through all this crap and managed to stay clean. I got through and to the other side. That's not to say that I was unscathed. I wear hearing aids. I've lost hearing as a result. I've lost some vision. But more importantly, I've lost huge chunks of memory. So it's kind of funny. I kind of laugh about it. I make a joke about it. But sometimes it's really freaking scary that when I hug somebody, I will say my name in the hopes that you're going to say your name back. Because the reality is, I may have known you for many, many years, and I'm going to forget. My husband laughs and he says, it's like 50 first dates all over again, every single day. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. He says, it's like being married to Drew Barrymore. And I'm like, who is she? And he's like, there was a movie, 50 first dates. The girl gets the amnesia, she forgets. That's you. And I'm like, oh, okay. He's like, you've seen the movie. I'm like, I don't remember the movie. So then there's that. you know, bottoms can vary, right? I know losing people, right, is a bottom. It's an emotional bottom that we suffer. One of the biggest for me was when my dog died. She died in my arms. And I'm telling you what, man, it broke me. It broke me. The love, the unconditional love of that dog was just something like I had never experienced from a person before. And that was very, very painful. Through having that brain tumor, I asked for prayers, lots of prayers. And, you know, a closed mouth will not get fed. And so if we don't come in here and talk and speak what it is we need, we won't get it. And I said, like, I don't know really how to navigate all this, but I do know and I believe in the power of prayer. So if you get a chance and you can just say a quick prayer before you go to sleep tonight, or just for my family, for my sponsees, for my sponsor to help us all navigate these uncharted waters, would be really greatly appreciated. And I remember that doctor at Hopkins telling me, he said, it's going to take me a couple days to assemble a team for this procedure. And in the course of that time, I really encourage you to get things in writing. You and your husband, I hate to say it, but you're going to need to talk about a DNR and get your affairs in order. He said, because I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. So I did that. I, you know, signed all my bank stuff over to my husband, and I wrote letters to my sponsees and my sponsor and family members and things like that. And there was this calm, this peace that came over me that, like, I knew no matter what, I was going to be okay, no matter what. And even if I died, that there would be a mark left by me on Narcotics Anonymous to show that no matter what, you don't have to use, no matter what. And I had somebody actually say to me, don't you want to get high? Like, you have every reason to get high. I can't tell you, like, if it was me, like, would I think I would probably get high if it were me. And I'm like, but what is that going to accomplish? So now I'm just going to be a practicing addict with a brain tumor. That just seems like a lot of extra work. Of which, like, I don't really have the time. Just saying. And so it hitting that bottom clean looked very different. Right? But I kept going to meetings. I had so many people reach out and say, what do you need? What can I do? You know, all of the things, right? And like in the moment, I don't know. I don't know what you can do. I like to eat if you like to cook. You know, they didn't say I couldn't eat. So, you know, we go through this whole thing of this brain procedure. So this tumor, it was called a hemangioblastoma tumor, and it was sitting at the very top of my spinal cord at the brain stem of my brain. So it was in this really kind of awkward spot, right? And they opened me up, and like I kissed everybody, I said all the things, and I went in there that day, and they said this procedure is going to probably take about 12 hours. And like this guy assembled a team. He brought people in from around the country to do this procedure. And when they opened me up, it wasn't what they thought it was. So he explained it. He actually took the bone, the skull piece that they cut, put it back on my head so my brain wouldn't fall out of this hole, and put some titanium tabs to hold it in place, and they had to reassemble another team. And that was because they found out that this tumor had actually grown fingers and had attached to multiple parts of my brain that controlled breathing and life, memory, speech, vision, all of the things, right? So I really don't have a lot of recollection about that part of it, and haven't had that conversation because the doctor told me about that, but I don't remember. I was pretty heavily sedated. And this actually made a medical journal. And there were people who then flew in from the Mayo Clinic to see this and document it and be part of this next procedure, where they had to actually dissect these fingers, because otherwise this thing was going to go really south. And I had said right from Jump Street, under no circumstances are we to keep me alive with any kind of machine, and I don't want to be a vegetable. And if anything goes south, I'm an organ donor. Take it all, take whatever you need, and give my body to science. And so they did the second procedure, and like I said, it has left me with some residual things. My speech slurs as well, but the memory loss is really very significant. You know, there are times when, and my husband has told me this also, he said, like, there are people who, like, they don't really like you, and you hug them like they're your best friend, and you introduce yourself, and they're like, I don't even freaking like her. Like, why is she hugging me? And he just giggles, like, girl, really? And I'm like, what? He's like, they don't really like you. I was like, oh, well, I didn't know that. Maybe now they'll be my best friend. He's like, yeah, no. I don't think that's going to happen, but good luck with that. So I had to make some notes because I can go off on another tangent. I can go down another road and forget really what it is I'm supposed to be up here talking about. So, listen, don't get it twisted. I love saying that. I sound like a young person. Don't get it twisted. I'm not. There was plenty of fear when I was in the middle of all that, right? Plenty of fear. But I had as much, if not more, faith, right? I had to. But I didn't have really any other choices. I could have like shrank and sat in a corner and, oh, woe is me and what am I going to do kind of thing. And I'm sure I had my moments, you know. But I didn't use. You know, I had the foundation of Narcotics Anonymous and the steps and the people, the fellowship to help me get through. And I won't forget that at the end of it, like, I had to learn how to walk again. I had to learn how to talk. I had to learn how to feed myself. I was a hot mess. And then somebody asked me to chair a meeting. And I can remember chairing this meeting, and it was ugly, like the speech stuff and all. And it was a lot of people in the room, and there was a fellow all the way in the back, and he raised his hand and he said, I'm so-and-so. I flew in from California. My brother lives here. And I just need to let you know that we heard about you in California, that there was an addict in the East Coast that needed prayers. How about that shit? Prayer works, right? The power of prayer and Narcotics Anonymous. I'm getting the signal. And you know what? Like, that was one of many storms. Life will show up with a vengeance. And for me, thank God I had a foundation. And I stay here. In 2015, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I had to weather that storm, right? And so it still goes on. Life shows up. And it can really suck sometimes. But when we come in here and we share our experience and what it is we're going through, we have each other to lean on, right? to give us that hope, because trust and believe, I'm not the only person, I'm not the first, and I certainly won't be the last to be able to share this experience. Thank you for letting me share.
Okay, I would like to thank Dan and Debbie for sharing a great meeting. As a reminder, the entertainment for tonight will be Friday night karaoke in the Owens Room and bingo in Warfield Room. Both start at 10 o'clock p.m. Saturday night, karaoke in the Owens Room and Karma, the ultimate rock band, in the Warfield Room. Both start at 10 p.m. Don't forget to visit merchandise, hospitality, and coffee stations. Can we close this meeting with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Why do you think I'm in the next year? It's been 5 years since I've been called
you to the secretary. Well, thank you.